What's up, guys? How's everybody doing?
So good.
Thank you for asking. Love it. Love the energy. So pumped to be back. Woo! Man, it's been a hot second since I've been podcasting. I'm so freaking excited. I hope you guys are just as equally as pumped as I am right now. So pumped. Is everybody pumped? I'm so pumped.
Yeah. Woo!
There we go. That's what I'm talking about.
Right. I'm going back to
for you. It's been like a month for you, right?
It's been a long time. It's been, I think, three podcasts off. But hey, here we are. Day. Whatever. Wow. It's fine. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Forecast, the bi-weekly podcast about everything games, film, and news. I'm Aaron Juno.
I'm Alex McCausland.
Ben Diaz.
I'm Caleb Juno.
I'm Chad McCausland.
Boom.
And I'm Jake Fetter, Kyle.
On today is episode number 217. I'm back, so it isn't a chaos cast. Ooh.
How dare you?
The controversy with Marathon continues, and Bungie does good. Plus, video games are expensive again. It's been exactly 28 years later, and Ben quits playing Elden Ring Nightreign. Yep. It's really sad.
Why do you quit?
Just makes me so sad. I don't know. We'll have to talk about it.
This is news to me.
This is a bit. You gotta lean into the bit, my guy.
Yeah, fuck this game.
Thank you. Finally.
I love that you put in the same sentence, controversy with Marathon continues and Bungie does a good.
Yeah, well, you know, it's part of it. They do some bad, some good. That's like the whole point of it. I wrap it up. They did a good. I guess I could have started with they did a good.
They have a carrot and a stick.
Yeah, it is. It really is. If you'd like to know more about what we do, you can follow us on our social channels. You can check out our website, wearetherizon.com. We have a ton of original content for you to browse through, including our Pathfinder 2E campaign, Crown of Conquest, where we're doing kingdom building.
Yeah.
Jake's no longer so excited.
New. I love it.
It's no longer new. It's been officially 1 year.
Wow.
So I can't call it new anymore. Wow. I know.
That's a cutoff, huh?
That is the cutoff for me.
Mm.
Additionally, Our kingdom is new. Additionally, everything we talk about is in our cast notes, which is pushed out to whatever podcasting app you are using. All right. Let's move on to the next thing, or the first thing, or whatever it is. It looks like we don't have a CCCP this week. It's marked out. So we're going to jump.
People stop sending those for some reason.
Oh, guys. Talk to your peeps. Get them to send. Come on. All right. We're jumping past news, jumping past tabletop, and headed straight to film. A couple dudes went and watched 28 years later. And this is exactly 28 years later from the first incident, right? Like the first movie.
You mean in real life or like in the storyline?
In real life.
In real life, I think it's like 25. It's like not quite.
It's close. Why didn't they wait? They could have totally done it.
I know. They could have waited a bit.
Okay. All right. Well, tell us about it.
I just want to mention it. I feel like they're doing some weird stuff with this movie. Some experimental cinematography. Very strange editing. I think it was really cool overall. Also, I'm just like a big fan of the series. I don't know. Chad, what did you think? Because Chad went with me to see it.
Yeah. I think Alex is a bigger fan of the series, but I've enjoyed the storylines in the 28 series. Going into this, I was informed via different people over the social medias that this is a weird timeline, which is untrue. But they basically said that it was 28 days later happened, and then 28 years later happens, and then 28 weeks after 28 years is when that movie comes out. That's not actually the case. I looked up on IMDb.
That would be dumb.
Well, they're, honestly, I was kind of rocking with it because it was kind of creative, and like these films just seem edgy to begin with, and like their storytelling and stuff like that, and the cinematography is pretty like different than most zombie movies. I thought it was pretty good. Like, you know, the story clips were kind of engaging, and I don't know, just held your attention the entire time. I think there were some stupid choices, but there's always stupid choices that people make in these types of movies, but you know, it was good. And I'm kind of looking forward and excited to, I think this is a part of a trilogy now. They're about to, this is like the first in three, so.
Yeah, I didn't realize going into this movie that it was not just going to be a one-off. But apparently they filmed this back-to-back with its sequel, and that's coming out in like January, so it's like not that far away.
Well, what are they going to call it? 28 years later, too?
28 years later, The Bone Temple.
What?
All sequels should be called The Bone Temple. Let's fucking go.
One thing I will say is that you watch this movie and there is a tone that is like all the way throughout it. And the last like 5 minutes of this movie, you're just like, I can see that they definitely, like after hearing what Alex just said, you could definitely see that they filmed back to back, because the tonality shift the last 5 minutes is absolutely wild.
Can we talk about how this entire movie was shot on an iPhone? Or
was
a whole bunch
really?
Of iPhones? The whole thing.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
That's crazy.
Yep.
Okay. They like doing weird stuff. The first movie is entirely shot, except for the last 5 minutes, is almost entirely shot on like a handy cam. And even if you watch the Blu-ray, it looks so terrible. It's like so low resolution.
Mm-hmm.
Very grainy.
They apparently had like hundreds and hundreds of iPhones used to film this movie. Yep.
The sponsor.
Why? Because they kept burning up in the heat or something?
No, they like placed them on tracks and they would catch like 10 to 15 different angles of the same scene every time they captured. And they were filming in 4K the whole time.
That actually makes sense. Yeah.
There's some weird editing. There's a lot of like, near the beginning, they do the first couple of kills with bows and it almost feels like they're in a video game or something. Like the arrow will hit somebody's neck and then like the whole scene will rotate around the kill and go to a different perspective.
That's cool.
Very quickly. I don't know. It's like a video game or something. It feels like a Sniper Elite or something.
Yeah, like slow-mo stop motion kind of, which with the multiple cameras, that makes sense. It's like stop motion.
That's how they did that then.
It's like how in The Matrix when they had like the slow-mo effect, they would use the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool.
Very neat.
It's also like, I feel like the trailer sets up the movie to be way more of a horror movie than it ends up being. There's not that many parts where they're trying to do the whole horror thing. There's actually a lot of like coming of age stuff. They take a lot of cues from Last of Us, I think, with like adult and child situations.
Adult and child situations, huh?
Yeah, that's weird. Don't
that's
phrase
maybe
like that.
Not the best.
You know those famous, well known.
Like a father and his kid out in.
That sounds so much better. Why did you say it that way?
Yeah. That's
adult
what I meant.
Child situations. Yeah.
Do they take more from The Last of Us Season 1 or The Last of Us Season 2 and how they approached story and filmmaking?
Yeah. They kill Mr. Days in the very first 2 seconds of the movie.
Mr. Days.
I assume that's his name.
Yeah, his first
thing later survives.
Oh, man.
I mentioned to Alex when we were talking, like, it seems like the zombies were definitely an afterthought in this movie. And, and like,
weird.
You know, it was more so like the story of survival with people and stuff like that.
Worth watching? Like in theaters? Worth watching? Or is it something you can watch at home? No problem.
I feel like you could probably watch it at home. It's fine.
Okay. What were you going to say, Jake?
I was curious if it was kind of similar to if you guys have seen, what is it, 20 Cloverfield Lane?
Oh.
That movie where it's like, it's a really good movie, but it is technically a Cloverfield movie.
Yeah.
Is it kind of like that vibe, or is it more connected?
It's more
than that?
It is more directly integrated in the 28 years timeline. Or 28,
gotcha. The 28 verse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sick. Okay, let's move on to a couple things in video game world. First of all, some Destiny 2 stuffs. I mentioned Bungie did a good.
Yeah, well, ish. Are you sure? Edge of Fate's coming out soon. I think it's the 15th, if I'm not mistaken. Coming up here July 15th, Tuesday, July 15th, 2025. Just let me hard timestamp this podcast.
Thank you, I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so a couple things that... first of all, there was a couple things I posted in the Discord. It's not stuff that's really relatively new news, but they had like a Vidoc that they went over. A lot of people are somewhat upset because they already had creators come out, playtest some of the stuff, and then those creators came back, made a ton of YouTube videos, and already announced like all of the information that they announced on the Vidoc. So the one thing that they released that was like brand new, nobody knew about, is we're getting a heavy crossbow. And the heavy crossbow, you shoot bolts, you can walk over to it, you can pick up the bolt. So it's like, even though it's heavy ammo, you can get your ammo back just by grabbing it out of enemies or grabbing it off the floor. Seems pretty cool. Armor 3.0 is coming. So that's a whole conversation that people are having. You get two perks to create a set, and then you get four piece create the full set. Apparently, exotics are going to be classified as like a tier 2 armor piece, which is kind of interesting. The only thing I can think of with that is maybe if they made it a tier 5 stat, and then you got the rest of your legendary armors as tier 5, it would just be too much stats going everywhere. And so they had to limit it somehow. I don't know. Maybe like their math is making it towards balanced, and I don't know. Another thing that they've released is a, it's called like a featured page. So like, you know how you go into like collectibles or something, and you can look at different weapon sections and like see all your weapons and collectibles. It looks kind of like that. But there's going to be like weapons and armor that are featured at base level get a 15%. Damage resist and a 10% damage buff. So that's kind of making some people think that we're going to be kind of locked down to this list. Like, this is going to be our meta for the whole, like, however long that season goes. Which is interesting because we've kind of had a similar thing happen in the artifact before where it's like you had to use this weapon in order to stun these champs. And it just kind of didn't play well. I actually watched a whole debate today between one of the guys who has cleared Destiny 2's like day one raids, like beaten a bunch of the day one raids is like the first place, and somebody else who's just very analytical numbers wise. One guy was saying that this is, could ruin Destiny just because, you know, we're backing into the this is what you use. The other guy's like, well, 10% is not really that much. We're going to have to see.
Yeah.
It gives them another knob to tweak meta.
Yeah.
Amongst all the other things that affect that.
Personally, it's not going to affect like the casual player base. Like 10% isn't really going to affect somebody who's just going to want to run a dungeon. But if we're like day one raids or like stuff like that, you've already turned that 10% off. So obviously it does like stack up enough that Bungie thinks it's you know, something that will affect the sandbox. Something that they have hinted towards, I asked this question actually to Aaron and Alex a while ago, how do they felt about loadout swapping, because this community is super split on it. Azacross actually did a poll asking, do people like loadout swapping? So basically, if you're wearing like speaker sight helmet to where you can throw your heal grenades as a warlock and heal throughout the entire encounter, but that isn't a damage build. When the boss damage phase comes, you switch over to Sanguines, like that just loadout swapping. People think it's unfair that you're able to kind of switch between one exotic headpiece to a chest piece, not lose your super energy, like be able to, you know, attack the boss and do a bunch of damage. But you were in a support role, but now you're in a damage role because you're able to loadout swap. People are like, well, that's unfair. That's a skill gap that like, I can't match, which like, really confuses me because it's a PvE game. It's not like I'm doing this against you. Like the only reason why this would count is like the day one raid stuff, which they've already put like not swap and stuff like that on like ultimatums. And anyways, they've released basically saying, specifically I use Sanguine because they actually said swapping to this exotic in combat will now apply a 10-second cooldown before its perk can be activated. So when Edge of Fate comes out, they're already tweaking that. And they say in another sentence below that, this is a minor step, and it's the first step in targeting exotics during the launch window. So, to me, this is sounding like they're wanting to do the not swap across all of Destiny. And so, like, even if you're in just like a casual raid, you're just not going to be able to swap. Which I guess is fine. Like, I have just recently started doing swaps, but I can play the game without it.
I think you're right that it really only affects like a very, very, very small subset of players, and sure, they're going to be upset about it, but it'll also even the playing field for everybody who can't achieve that. You still want to be competitive. Like if you're, you know, for thinking about us, like if we jump into a day one raid, we're not going to be swapping. We're just, we have a loadout. Sure. That's where we're playing. If it doesn't work, we're freaking banging our heads against the wall until we swap out a couple weapons. Then we go again. Mm-hmm. It's not like we're not swapping at all, but to me, it's going to feel like, all right, there's no like major tactical advantage with somebody swapping things out, I guess. I mean, that's fine.
Yeah. I find no reason why swapping shouldn't be a thing. It also just adds another kind of fun avenue to the game where it's like, I've already pushed my damage to a certain point in this encounter. And if this is the way you like to play, then, you know, instead of just doing three phases on a boss, I want to be able to do two phases on a boss or even one phase on a boss. And that loadout swap is the thing that tweaks that and makes you able to do that, then you should be able to. I know when we were doing the ultimatum, Ekthar Ghost of the Deep encounter, we were using loadouts and we weren't swapping during the encounter. And then at a certain point, we swapped up our loadouts, but that was like before we started the encounter, and we stuck with those loadouts throughout the encounter. And it was ridiculous how, one, we didn't die, and two, we actually like got through it after we were dying multiple times and barely getting through it. So it's like, I don't know.
Yeah, I feel
you
that.
You can play the game without swapping. For some reason, in their language, they actually say there's a balance issue where it feels mandatory. It's like, I've never felt it mandatory to do swapping. I've done it because I thought it was fun. I didn't do it because I thought I have to do this or else I can't do the PvE. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It's not like... World of Warcraft has the issue where they have Deadly Boss Mod. If you don't have Deadly Boss Mod, you're pretty much not able to do the raid content because they legitimately design their raids around the fact that people have Deadly Boss Mod now. So, like, if there's a bomb on you, that's going to kill your group. Kind of like in the King's Fall Ogre Golgoroth encounter. It would tell you, move, bomb on you, move. We don't have that in Destiny. You know, we don't have those mods on purpose. So, like, I don't know, like, devs, the World of Warcraft devs are like, okay, we're going to make this content, like, super, super difficult because you're already being told exactly what to do. But, yeah, so.
I feel like the people that would argue it's, like, required are the same people that are, like, one- or two-phasing stuff instead of doing three phases. And it's like, you can always just three-phase a boss.
Yeah.
Not required to do it in the most efficient way possible.
I mean, even in the hardest content where it actually has an enrage timer, it's three phases. Like,
right?
Unless like you can't get that three phase without loadout swapping.
Yeah, which
I don't
is not
see
a thing.
The mandatory word coming into play.
Yeah.
They also got some ability tweaks and stuff like that. I mean, there's a whole this week in Destiny that came out today, so people are kind of looking over that. Yeah. All in all, I think bottom line. The changes look cool. Armor 3.0 having different stats, being able to do different types of build crafting, having different tiers of weapons, tiers of armor. It actually makes it to where like armor matters, because for I don't know how long I've had a set of armor that I use and I kind of tweak to get the like I'm a mobility hunter, or I'm a strength titan, or I'm a discipline warlock, and that is it.
Yep.
But now it's like you actually have to look at armor again for once. So I'm pretty excited for the new content. I know there's a lot of discourse right now, and trust and faith has been kind of broken between Bungie and their community, which I guess that's a good...
Yep. That's a good transition to let's talk a little bit about Marathon. You guys talked about the controversy last week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were hints at that point that there was going to be a delay, but it's pretty clear now that have they actually announced a delay at this point? I haven't
paid
attention.
They did.
Okay.
Yeah.
An indefinite delay, no new date.
Am I the one who hates indefinite delay? Because that makes it sound like it's forever, when it really just means they said we're going to delay it and they didn't say anything else. I don't know.
Yeah.
It feels very clickbaity to me. Because they all say, oh, it's been delayed indefinitely. And it's like, well, they just didn't say the new date.
I don't know, man. Fallen Heroes was delayed indefinitely.
Hey, listen. That's because it's still coming out,
still
Caleb.
Coming out. Very soon.
Any minute now. That's their new project. November this year. You'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
But yeah, kind of like you said, we talked about last week how Sony had basically pulled all their marketing for it. They had all this marketing stuff set up and they pulled it all. So it was like, well, that's probably bad. That's probably not a good sign for Marathon.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if any of you guys were excited for this game or anything. I honestly could care less. It's just been kind of an interesting thing to keep an eye on.
I mean, it looked cool, but therein lies the entire rub right there.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I would have been willing to try it just because it's like, if it plays like Destiny and they do something unique with the formula, then that would be probably cool enough for me to want to check it out. But also at the same time, like charging a premium price for it, I'm not going to like buy it to check it out probably. I don't know.
Yeah.
It is kind of wild to me that after Concord, they were like, nope, we're still going to charge premium price for this game. Like, I get it's Bungie. They have a lot of goodwill, whereas Concord was nobody, essentially. It was like their first studio. But like, I don't know, man. It feels like that should have given them pause. Like, are we sure we want to charge for this multiplayer only thing?
Man, I also like our Graders is right around the corner. Well, yeah. I guess we can't really say that because Marathon's delayed now. So our Graders probably gonna be first.
Sure.
But are you sure Ark Raider is going to be free when it comes out? And also there's BRs and extraction shooters that are already free. So like, I don't get the model of paid for Marathon.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Cause didn't, when Concord came out, wasn't that around when Marvel Rivals came out as well?
I mean, there was
near, they had betas running at the same time, I think.
That's what it was. Yeah. It was the betas. I just remember something where it was like, why would I pay money for the one that looks worse?
Mm-hmm.
And it, like, I don't, you know, obviously I haven't played Marathon or anything in that genre really, but it feels like history repeating itself a little bit.
There was like Deadlock up in there too. So, I mean, there's again, options that it just doesn't make, like, unfortunately, you want to make money, but put microtransactions in the game, like make it free. Right. Like,
or don't enter that genre. You know what I mean? Yeah. Different kind of game. If you want to charge a premium, you can't say it's this multiplayer only thing. You need to do something else. Sorry. That's not how the space works anymore.
And I would say also, like, Concord is not the first example of a failed attempt to try and get somebody, like, charge them a premium price for a game that was multiplayer only.
Oh, sure.
And I think that model has been proven over and over to not really be functional. And that instead the best pathway is to have some sort of, you know, season where you're buying a season pass or you're doing some sort of microtransaction while you're playing. Like, that is the model that seems to draw players in because you get an early player base with, like, that game's free. You go and you play it, you get excited about it, you want to buy into it. All right. If you produce a good game, people are going to come back to it. It's just how it works. I just don't understand why they are trying to repeat this strategy again with all of the history of what of games in this style, not even in this style, games in this format, I guess, being trying to produce and try to sold at a higher price than they should be.
I think a perfect example of like a premium price game that's quote unquote successful, where it's like almost multiplayer only, but it gives other things, like it's Call of Duty, first of all, with zombies, there's like a campaign.
Sure.
But then there's like the reason people buy it is for the multiplayer, but they also have everything else. And then Warzone's free.
Yeah.
So like they have a pretty decent model if you wanted to do the premium price stuff like that. So, I mean, if Marathon was a bigger universe, like they had like Marathon's extraction shooter, but then they wanted like a PvP only arena style. I don't know.
Well, Call of Duty's always have like a 9 to 15 hour single player campaign, too. Like, and it's well fleshed out. Even if the story is not great, the amount
the
of
content
maps,
is there.
The content is insane. This doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. But, you know, whatever. Neither here nor there. Who knows? It's delayed indefinitely. We may never see it.
Yeah. We're living in 2016 when stuff like Overwatch happens. And you pay $40 for Overwatch 10 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, we paid, how much was Helldivers 2? Was that $40?
Yeah, I think it was.
I mean, there's another one that's not, I mean, there's a story, there's an overarching thing that's going on, but it's not you're not playing single player. There's only one real mission style campaign that you're doing. You're just gently landing on a planet, doing a mission, coming home.
That one has PvE though, so I don't know.
Yeah, I think like co-op games still exist in a realm where you charge for them.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that move over yet.
Yeah.
True.
Like Night Rangers came out and that's a PvE game, but
I mean, I guess it's really about what's your competition. You know, you look at something like Night Rain, it almost doesn't have competition. Like, Raven's Watch, I guess, a similar thing. But, like, you're really just drawing on the Elden Ring fandom, which is huge.
Yeah.
Whereas you put out an extraction shooter and you're competing against 5 different free extraction shooters.
Yeah.
that are already big and have their own player
right.
bases.
So you need set. To, you're trying to steal that audience and you're charging them up front.
Yeah.
You're putting yourself on the a bad, like bad foot after bad foot, you know?
Like the win condition would be you want to attract Destiny players, I guess.
Sure.
And Destiny players do not want Marathon.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, that's true.
In the case also with these games, though, don't you kind of, you imagine those studios are waiting for the people who are producing these other, their competitors' games to kind of change something and piss a bunch of their player base off? Because that happens so often. And then they're like, oh, they'll shift over to something else. Like, imagine the Overwatch situation. And now we have Marvel Rivals, and everybody's like, why even play Overwatch?
There's that is no basically what Rivals did, though.
Yeah. Right?
I don't know if, like, the people in charge are smart enough to try to pull something like that off. Like, frankly, right. A lot of times it just feels like they don't understand the industry that they are in.
Yeah.
It feels like a lot of times people at the top are like, oh, Fortnite makes a lot of money? Okay, make a Fortnite. Make me a bunch of money. What are we doing? Why are we having this conversation?
Man. Making
makes
money
sense to me.
Yeah.
Speaking of making money, we should talk a little bit about the price of games. We've been talking about the premium price of these multiplayer games, but there's also some other games that are coming out that are going to be much, much more expensive, like The Outer Worlds 2.
Yeah, that's such a weird one. So I know there was a lot of buzz about like the new Mario Kart game, Mario Kart World, right? It's $80, which is an insane price point. I can't imagine anyone willing to pay for that, but I'm sure people do. But the real kind of the reason people were upset about it, it's ridiculous to charge that for a Mario Kart. But the bigger issue is that other companies are going to see that and go, oh, we do an 80. Oh, yeah. We do an 80 now. Okay. And so Microsoft has been the first one who kind of jumped on that, announcing that The Outer Worlds 2 is going to be $80, which is ambitious.
Mm-hmm. It's beyond ambitious. Like I think about the amount of content that's in a game like The Witcher 3 or Baldur's Gate 3, and I'm like, those games were $60.
Mm-hmm.
Insane.
And there's literally hundreds of hours of playability. And now we're talking about Outer Worlds 2, which presumably is going to be similar to Outer Worlds 1. It's a single player campaign. Maybe it's, I don't know, how long did the first one take? 30, 40 hours?
A lot less than that, I think.
Right? Even less than that?
Mm. Yeah, I think the first one's pretty short. But I do think they've said that the second one's quite a bit bigger than the first one in scope.
Okay. It better be quite a bit bigger.
I think it's supposed to be. That's the problem, right?
I've been listening. I've been keeping up with all the stuff they've done. And it sounds awesome. I'm actually kind of excited about it. I don't know if I'm $80 excited for it, but I am excited for it. For the record, main plus size for Outer Worlds is 26.5.
Okay, I overestimated a lot.
Very short, actually. Main story, 13.5.
I mean, again, at that price point, Witcher 3, Cyberpunk 2077, Red Dead Redemption 2. I mean, these games have like hundreds and hundreds of hours.
Hollow Knight was $15.
And that one, there you go.
Another anomaly.
I'd be so interested to see like the statistics when they come out on sales for this game. And then I'd also be interested to see Square Enix try to pull something like this where they do $80. And then be like, man, we didn't hit our prediction.
Yeah, right. You know they got that locked and loaded.
I mean, it's my conspiracy theory. It's a Microsoft studio. They're just like, look at how good a value Game Pass is, guys. It's $80 game or Game Pass.
Or $10. I was literally just about to say that I think it's probably to push people to get in on Game Pass.
Man,
which,
I would not be
surprised. It'll work.
Do you guys really think the subscription model is that much more profitable for them? Are there that many people who are just like not playing games and spending $10 a month to buy into the subscription model?
I sadly am one of those people. I think I've had Game Pass for about a year now, and I think I've played one game on it for the last year.
Never mind.
I play COD online, so.
Yeah.
Their end game is to be the subscription service you don't think about. It's just a part of your life. Every gamer just has Game Pass, and it's just assumed that they just have it.
They want to be the Spotify of
Spotify,
video game world.
Netflix. Like, how often do you go a long time without watching anything on Netflix? And then you're like, oh man, still paying for that.
Yeah.
It's true.
I mean, someone must have crunched the numbers and decided it makes sense, because fucking everything is a subscription now.
The other issue I have with subscriptions in general is I feel like once you have spent time in that universe, it has, the algorithm has figured out and feeds you exactly what you like very effectively. Spotify knows to a T what I want to listen to. Even when it's suggesting new artists, it is like right up my alley every time. And thinking about going to some other universe to listen to music is, there's no possible way. I'm like, going to pay for Spotify until I die.
Sure.
Or Netflix, watch like viewing history. Forget it. What am I going to go letterboxed and just one by one pick movies that I've watched? No. Take way too much time.
I signed up for a tracked account and got an extension that went through my entire Netflix history and transferred it.
Okay, that's pretty cool. Can you tell me how to do that?
I guess you could do
that. Yeah, I feel like in the crunching the numbers, if you really just think about it simply, if you have like 10 people buy Outer Worlds, like $80 a pop, or 100 people subscribe because there's various different games that they want to play, 100 is going to be more profitable than the 80, so...
I feel like it's going to be more profitable for Xbox, but not the studios making those games.
Sure,
that's the real issue.
What do you think Xbox cares about though? Because they're going to lay off the studio.
Do you think they're also getting more money out of the fact that Game Pass, the money goes direct to Microsoft versus a lot of the games that are probably being bought from Steam?
I mean, probably.
Yeah, I mean that's a good point. But Steam does take a pretty big cut.
Yeah, Steam takes a cut on everything too. You buy stuff and then you sell it on the marketplace. Steam takes a cut. Their model is incredible.
Yeah. That's the reason they stopped making games.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. But I, man, that's tough. I'm going to be sad to hear about more $80 games coming out. I think there are games that certainly I would have spent $80 on, knowing now like the amount of joy that I got out of playing that game.
Like Borderlands 4.
Yeah, Borderlands 4. Hey, 100%.
They only have to spend $70 on it now.
It's only $70, which...
Congratulations.
What a steal.
We'll see if it's any good, but...
I do... Well, we can talk about Borderlands 4 after this.
We can talk about it now.
I am cautiously optimistic. I appreciate from all the trailers I've seen that they are at least acknowledging that their formula is aged and not working anymore. I saw it and I went, oh man, this is a little weird. Seems like they're taking themselves way more seriously and putting less comedy in than an old Borderlands game. But then I was reading and they were like, listen, the comedy, like, it's not working anymore. Like, people, it's overdone. We've done so much of it. And it just, Borderlands 3, people hated it because it felt like the same thing again.
Yep.
And I was like, okay, I can appreciate them trying something new. I'm sure there will still be some, you know, comedy in there. It looks. I'm cautiously optimistic. We'll see. I'm not buying it day one, but I'm hopeful, like, I'll be buying it week two.
Like, directly calling out the legendary thing with like drop rate and stuff like that, and acknowledging that they've done bad in the past with that. So it's like, what else can they acknowledge that they need to fix up? And is it going to be good? We'll see.
What were we going to say about Baldur's Gate, Chad?
I was going to say with a spending more money on a game than you should have. I bought Baldur's Gate 3 twice, so I bought it once on Steam. They came out with a collector's edition, like physical copy, and I was like, oh, let's support them some more. You know, they did a banger job, so.
Yeah, they deserve that, man.
Yeah. Crazy. You guys know what it's time for?
Whoopipple.
Where's Caitlin?
Whoopipple.
Good old Whoopipple. All right, let's start with a game we've all been playing, some more effectively than others, some with less understanding of any of the game mechanics than others. That is Elden Ring Nightreign.
Who is we not this? Talked about this like as a group yet?
Oh, we did last time, but okay. I wasn't here for that, so we have to talk about it again because he's the, you know, most important person on the cast.
Wow, thanks, Ben. I appreciate that.
Well, they've done some new stuff also since we last talked about it.
True.
Their non-live service title is now updating weekly with new bosses.
Non-live service title. Thank you for that. That's good.
Yeah. So they've got the Everdark Sovereign bosses that they've added the game. Basically, they secretly designed third phases for what seems like it's going to be all the bosses, and they're releasing them one by one as like special versions of the bosses that you can fight that are much harder. Pretty cool. The first one was a lot of fun.
Yes.
Second one's very hard. We have not beat it yet.
We've only put in about the same time as the first boss we fought.
That's true.
Yeah.
Which bosses?
The first one was the Gaping Jaw.
Okay.
And
yeah.
The new one is the Dark Drift Knight.
Which okay. You haven't fought yet.
I haven't fought the Knight yet. I fought the Gaping Jaw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Gaping Jaw, but like turned up to 11.
Oh, good. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool.
It's super cool fight. I'm assuming those are going to keep coming back around on a cycle.
Yeah, like after
they go
through
all
them all once, they'll just
start imagine so.
Cycling them back through. Yeah. Especially because they added a whole new shop with a new currency based on these bosses now.
Oh.
They have like a bunch of new chalices in there with different color patterns for the different characters. And there's a couple unique relics. There's like one relic that's unique per special boss, it seems. And then like they have big relics for each of the characters that just seem like they're good, but they're like from stuff that you can randomly get. But they're like curated to be good.
Yeah. Mm.
So that's pretty cool. I'm having a blast with that game. I the other day went and added it to my possible Geo2 hide list.
Wow, really likes it.
Yeah. It's been a ton of fun.
Until Borderlands 4 and The Outer Worlds 2 comes out.
Yeah, true, true, true.
The real masterpiece. And Mario Kart, presumably.
Silk Song, Half-Life 3. They're talking about Hades 2 might drop this year, 1.0.
Oh, so now, shoot.
Yeah.
That's going to be dangerous.
Yeah, man. I've been having so much fun with this game. It continues to be fun. I have like 80 hours in it. It's still enjoyable.
Like the first couple days, one of the big complaints was, it doesn't really change that much. It's not very random. And it's like, you know what? Doesn't really matter. It's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually, I think it lends itself to the formula because basically you start off like a baby in that game, not knowing anything. It's all chaos. It's super hard. You're like, man, this is rough. I don't know. And then like you basically learn the map. You learn what you mm-hmm. should be aiming for. You learn a lot and you get a lot better. And there's just enough random elements to like keep you going.
Are you still 80 hours in? Are you still like learning things while you're playing?
Yeah.
Really? You mentioned a couple new things today.
I'm mostly learning things from the internet at this point. Yeah. I still don't know.
Wow.
It's interesting. The way you explain that, Ox, it's almost like they managed to reproduce the experience of playing a Souls-like in a multiplayer setting.
Right?
Where you start off, where like the knowledge you gain is almost more important than the actual like in-game XP. That's interesting.
It's crazy.
I don't know, I heard it was half-baked, but 60 hours.
Yeah, they reused assets. Unbelievable.
I just mentioned today, too, like the review score on Steam has gone up dramatically. It seems like the more people play it, the more they like it.
Yeah.
And like the people that have stuck around have realized the depth there and the, you know, how good it really is and not just the hot takes of when it first came out of like, sure. I don't know, it seems kind of bad.
Have you been liking it, Aaron? We all talked about it last cast.
It's cool. It's very cool. I have no idea what's going on. I have 6 hours in this game. I beat three Night Lords in a row.
You're mostly playing with Caleb and Chad?
Yeah, Caleb and Alex.
Okay. Yeah, that was my experience playing with Caleb was... Caleb's like, okay, we're going to go here, and then we're going to go over there, and we're going to go over there, and I'm like, all right, put it on, boss, let's go.
Dude, we'd killed two Night Lords before I even opened the map.
Yeah, it's almost like Aaron and Jake should link up with somebody because playing with like the group of Caleb, myself, or Alex, like we already know where to go, like we know what's going on. And then killing it took us forever to kill the first like three bosses.
Yeah,
and then after that, we kind of soared through them. But
we've got the third boss is like one of the hardest ones for some reason.
But like being able to kill like back to back bosses like the first 6 hours that you're playing, it's like, all right, you're not really getting the experience.
Yeah, the third one took us so many attempts when we first played, and then we played with Aaron and we beat it in one try. So
I think we had just a crazy good run.
Or Aaron's good.
Skill issue.
I mean,
skill
could
issue.
Be? Aaron's good. I will say, Caleb and I have been playing with one of our friends who doesn't play games as much, and that's actually been really fun.
Okay. Nice. That's the way to play it.
Yeah.
it's just a really cool concept. And compared to like the complexity and chaos of traditional Elden Ring and like the not understanding anything that's going on in the game for a long period of time, this one I feel like you can jump in with people. Maybe they have a little bit more knowledge of you, maybe it's a lot more, but you can just still run and have fun. Like, I don't care. I'm following this loop that Caleb does every single time we play. We go to here, we go to here, we go in this in the basement of the castle, we go all the way to the top, we kill the enemy, the boss, with the blah, blah, blah. And we just, it's the same thing over and over and over. But it's just, I don't know, there's something about it. Something about the loot that drops, something about like figuring out the build as you're playing. And then having the abilities is just, it's like, I don't know. They got the balance. They got it figured out. It's great.
I have a question. Is playing with somebody that doesn't usually play video games fun because you guys have to like try hard so hard to like make up for the other person?
I mean, there's maybe an element of that. She has gotten a lot better just going on a few runs. And so it kind of gives us, because it's not just like she's getting better, but it's also, I think we're getting a better feel for how to play together.
Mm-hmm.
It's been really fun.
I think about this a lot, and I was just thinking about it the other day because the Destiny info was coming out, and I was thinking about the campaigns. And my favorite campaign that I played through in Destiny was Witch Queen. I think it was partly because it was me, Aaron, and Derek, and Derek was not good.
No.
It was so hard.
The slander.
He would lay Piper Xenophage from like the back of the map. That's all he did.
That legendary campaign was so difficult. Me and Aaron had to try so hard just to get through the regular missions. It was crazy. Man. And it was so nice when we finished it. I was like, man.
Is that why you're liking the ultimatums?
I think that it's like I really like that part of Destiny. Yeah. Sorry to get off track with that, but I've just been thinking is that the reason why?
Yeah. Caleb and I will literally like look at the map and ping something at the same exact time because we just know that we're going
in sync now.
We're like, yeah, Caleb will be like mid sentence, like, yeah, we're gonna go to this. Oh, okay, yeah, that one.
Yeah, I just follow. I do the Aaron when I'm playing with them. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. It doesn't bother me. I don't good. I don't have a need to like learn and understand the map. Sure. You know, there's still some mechanics of the game that I'm kind of getting used to. I'm not there sprinting. Yet. Yeah, also, sprinting is one of them.
It's really still helpful if you try to help, because then you can notice stuff that we don't and call it out.
What am I possibly going to notice that you don't?
There's many times that I've missed a special merchant or the special village.
Uh-huh.
Before it's too late.
Yeah, it's everything that's special. Just look for the specials.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, I also have like a really bad sense of direction, so sometimes they'll make it to like the top of the castle or something, and I'm like, man, I don't remember how to get there.
Yeah, you guys are describing every time I played with them.
That I have on a loop now, I'm good.
And now I'm like trying to figure out how to make it up to the top, and I'm like, man, I've played like 50 hours this. How do I not know the structure of this castle?
It's the same
because you just have to follow Caleb the whole time and not actually think about what you're doing.
Car with the blue line.
Yes, that's what it is. It's Alex's
directions. I have to use GPS every time.
Going to the grocery store, which you can see from my house, I'm pretty sure Alex uses GPS.
Okay, no. Wow.
I do use GPS to drive to your house, though, despite it being one of the most common routes I take.
You
like
lived
hundreds
here.
Of times.
Yeah.
See, I use the GPS because I want to know the fastest way that traffic is.
Yeah, it's the same. Mm.
But
it's
the same
for
me.
Totally same. One thing I want to say about this is I'm intrigued because every time we have played, we've done the same exact loop. And we have not ventured into some of the areas of the map that I have never been before. I have never been into a mine. I've never been, never once. I've played 6 hours this game. I've never been into a mine.
Wow.
It's because we don't do it. You have a loop in your mind. Oh, man. Like, you're like, this is the way we play this game.
You should have been there the other day.
So I've never once used a smithing stone. I've never really bought. Never.
Why would he use
one.
It if he doesn't go into mines, Caleb? Yeah. Don't shake your head.
You can buy one at the special market.
Oh, yeah, you
can
also.
Level
you need a level 2 weapon.
Smithing
That's
stones
good.
As well.
You can also find them on the ground without it being the mine.
Yeah.
Sure, but
you're not going to get the good one.
I'm trying to keep up with the person who's running in the front. I barely have time to check my peripherals. Otherwise, I'm lost and I'm somewhere else.
They better
on the
be
map.
Connected.
And like Chad and Caleb know exactly where all the stone sword keys are. Mm-hmm. And so they always have stone sword keys. And then occasionally one of them will ask, does anybody have a stone sword key? I'm like, there's no way I have one. Why are you even asking?
I know. Do you guys ever have the problem where they go off one of those big jump pads and then you just do that and realize you've gone the complete opposite direction of the way that they went off the jump pad?
I've learned
and I'm just like, oh, I'm way over here now.
I've learned to hesitate half a second and make sure where their face is on the compass. And then I can follow no problem after that.
I didn't know this was a big deal for Alex. I'm gonna slow down, I guess.
I'm big at going off those jump pads and immediately spinning around in the opposite direction.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's cool game. Sometimes, every once in a while, you guys would be like, where's our third? Trying to get to the top of this castle. I don't remember how.
I got that unlock. No problem.
I'm underneath the castle attacking. You know, we're dying. We're like, where's our third?
Who do you like to play, Aaron? Which character?
I mean, Iron Eye's just
Iron Eye.
It's cool, also he's very good. Boring. Like the games that I've played, people are just I never got hit by anything ever, even during boss fights. I'm just in the background shooting
Caleb
people
just
with big arrows.
Everyone, you like show up to the Night Lord, and it's like, oh, he's dead. Oh,
yeah. I do really like the Guardian, actually.
Mm. I do. It's interesting to me the changes they made to make a shield character viable. I feel like I talked about this last cast, but the way he enters like that stance, I think it makes it a lot more interesting than it could have been otherwise if he could just block instead of dodging.
Yeah,
I've had some of my best runs on Guardian. He gets some like a couple of different buffs that affect shielding or what's the thing called when you retaliate after shielding, whatever that crap is.
Guard counter. Yeah.
You do some stuff with that, and then all of a sudden something hits your shield and it procs like several particle effects, and then you do like a cool guard counter that does something else also. It's awesome. It's one of the more unique builds that you can craft along the way, I think. Whereas most of the characters are like, you get a great sword, that's what you do with your character.
Yeah, that's true.
I started to like the Guardian more. He was my least favorite by far to start. I think he's more reliant on good relics or good random pickups throughout the run than most characters.
Yeah.
I've been given to understand that those while walking buffs, like things that summon lightning while you're walking or rain of stars, are very good on him because when you're walking around with your shield, it counts.
Yep.
I've not tried it myself, but it sounds very promising.
I had 3 or 4 different while walkings with Revenant at one point. And so I just
that's awesome.
Every time you asked.
Sure.
Yeah, sure. Oh yeah, that's Recluse I'm thinking of. You can do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I have also only played 4 of the characters, Jake. So
yeah. Intriguing.
And I have 40% of all achievements. 6 hours in, played 4 characters.
I think Duchess is my favorite.
Yeah. Oh really?
Yeah, I love Duchess.
I mean, I also love Duchess.
Her ability is just so satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
Waiting for the opportune moment to like repeat a bunch of crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's very cool.
So her double dodge is like,
it's so good.
Like, oh, the boss is doing something. I'm out. I'm gone.
Yeah.
I don't even talk to me.
All right, let's move on to some other games. Caleb, what have you been playing lately?
I've been playing the new DLC for Liza P, Overture.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil much of it, but it's more Liza P. It's really good so far. It seems like it's pretty extensive. I don't know how far through it I am, but it's been quite a long time already that I've been playing it. Let's say like
nice,
maybe 8 hours or so that I've been in the DLC so far.
A lot of new weapons.
Quite a few new weapons. Some obviously new bosses, so new boss weapons as well. Cool. I finally found a weapon I like more than the twin blade, the dragon twin blade.
Yeah.
So that's exciting.
I'm gonna hit you with this. Are there any weapons in the DLC that you're like, man, I wish I had built a different way to use that weapon? Like a strength weapon that's really cool, or a advance motivity, whatever the fuck it's called.
Yeah. Problem is, I usually just look at them and I'm like, oh, I can't use that. And I don't really think about it beyond that.
No
there thoughts. There are some that just have looked cool. But I've, you know, thrown away immediately.
Incredible.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
You're not going to use a weapon that's bad for your build.
Yeah.
It's like a prequel, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
You travel back in time. It's not explained why that happens, but you do.
It's like the Dark Souls 1 DLC does the same thing. You go back in time.
Oh, so okay. It's not a flashback. You physically travel back to the time. Okay.
Yep.
It's sort of a prequel, but not really.
Yeah, Gemini seems really confused for a long time about it, and I'm like, catch up, man. We're in the past. It's obvious.
Just glad Gemini has more voice lines. Love that guy.
He's got quite a lot in this.
Great. Great.
I will say the theming, I think, for these areas is really good. Mm. Some really cool stuff.
I mean, the base game did a really good job of that too, though.
Oh yeah,
that's true. This one has even stronger identity in its areas.
Man, I freaking love Blaise P. That was just such a good game, kind of out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, the Pinocchio game's gonna be good. There's no fucking way. That doesn't make any sense.
Dude, literally a joke great. Leading up to the release.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first time you learn you have a P organ, you're like, all right, done.
Game of the year. That's it. I'm done.
Gosh. All right, I'll go next. I've been playing two things. I've been playing back through Doom the Dark Ages on, I can't think of the difficulty right now.
Pandemonium.
There we go. Pandemonium. I need somebody else to be playing through Pandemonium with me. I know Caleb's never going to touch this game again, ever. Has anybody else beaten this game yet?
I haven't beaten it yet, but I'm getting close.
You're getting close? All right.
I got the last melee weapon.
That's good.
Got the BFC.
Man. Of course it would be. Because they can't have a BFG in this game.
Right.
Because it's the Dark Ages.
It's the Dark Ages. It's a crossbow.
Yeah. It's sick. You thought a BFG could kill a bunch of enemies? No. The BFC
can't.
Absolutely insane. Comparison.
Now I want to know what they did to the BFC to make it just not usable. Yeah. And the BFG is even worse later.
Don't know, man. I mean, enemies just got stronger is what I'm guessing. And the BFG just couldn't keep up. Still did a lot of damage.
Does seem to be the case that enemies got stronger.
There are some enemies that are very similar to future games or future story enemies that are way stronger than their versions. Like Hackademons are like...
Oh, dude. Yeah, they'll mess you up.
Way stronger in this game than other Doom games.
Mess you up.
Were you trying to switch off of Doom?
No, go ahead. I was just...
You seem like you liked the first two renditions of Doom, Doom and Doom Eternal.
I do. A lot.
Very movement heavy, verticality, etc. I heard this one's more grounded. What's your perspective on this compared to those?
That is very true. You do not have nearly the mobility. You're not flying up in the sky. There's not jump pads. I mean, there are actually no jump pads in this, except for like... accessing secret areas. There are no jump pads in like the arenas almost at all. You are very much on the ground. You're not even moving towards enemies with like you don't have like a chain gun on your chainsaw. You do have your shield charge, which is pretty satisfying, especially with a couple upgrades. I think they swapped out mobility for a lot of unique mechanics for individual weapons, and that's what they chose to really approach in this game. A lot of the like peak build peak upgrades for weapons completely change the way you use them, and it makes gunplay quite a bit of fun. And I like just mowing down tons and tons of enemies. Previously, you find an arena in Doom Eternal, it's like, all right, there's 30 enemies, but only 10 spawn in at a time. You get to the latter parts of this game, there's like 150 enemies in an arena, and it is absolute chaos. Granted, they have the issue that Caleb's talking about where there's a whole bunch of shield guys just standing in a row, and their purpose is essentially to give you health and shield back because you've been hit by one thing. So you got to recover a little bit here and there. Yeah, but
they've always had fodder enemies that exist solely to give you benefits.
I mean, they have.
They've
but
never it, had as many.
It's just different in this. And there's not that you don't have glory kills. You don't have the loop of flamethrower to a melee strike to get like shield back and then health back and then glory kill him to get more health back. That loop does not exist. The loop exists in the sense that like you're swapping between weapons to fight the correct enemy, even though any weapon will do. You like the super shotgun? You can play the entire game with super shotgun. No problem. but it's way more fun to swap around and check out different weapons. There's a lot of cool mechanics for that. The one argument I have against all of Caleb's points are that he wants less story. I want more story out of this game.
Hey, this one takes itself so seriously.
It takes itself so... I want more of that seriousness.
I hate it.
And there's a fun... There's a fun twist quite a ways into the game that I think is really cool and really unique. And they also introduce you to kind of like a... I don't want to spoil anything. They introduce you to just different areas that you've never encountered before in Doom.
And those are, unfortunately, in the trailers.
Oh, they are? I never watched
really
the trailers.
Really annoying.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Those worlds are really cool, and they do some stuff with mechanics that just make it really interesting. But overall, I think it's a really good game. Great game, and I'm happy with it. The other thing I've been playing is jump back in on some Warhammer 40K Rogue Trader because the new DLC came out, and I was like, you know what? It's time. I've been thinking about this game. It's been itching the back of my mind. We just need to get back in it and play it. What a good game.
So good.
This is a great game.
How's my boy Abelard doing?
Oh, dude. Yes, Abelard? Tell them, Abelard.
Do you bring him at all?
Do I bring him at all?
In fights?
Right now, I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure. I kicked him out so early. Never used him for so long.
Yeah, he's kind of lame in comparison to the... It's weird because he's...
So sad.
He doesn't have a lot he's doing. Like, all the other characters have a lot going on. He's like, all right, I charge, I hit somebody, and then I swing in an AoE. Cool. That's it. That's all I'm doing.
He also explains the entire plot to everyone at all times.
At all times. And it is important to have him for that reason.
That's an important job.
It was so funny. We were playing, and literally Alex was playing Abelard, and every time I had a dialogue option, I'd be like, Abelard, explain the plot to them.
It's also important to note, we were playing on stream and we were voicing our characters.
Mm-hmm. So just be like, Alex, do you want to read like four paragraphs of text? Go
so
ahead.
Much. So Sounds much text lot. For Abelard.
Oh, what a game.
Yeah. I think it's there are some unique things about this game. I think their choice of when to do actual voice acting, when to actually have actors read lines versus not, is very strange.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of off-putting at times. But I did think it was really cool. This new DLC that they released was also a DLC for another Warhammer 40K game simultaneously. Like, that character you can play in, it's Darktides.
Yeah, they added a new class to Darktide recently.
That class is the class that's in World Trader. That's cool. And they released on the same day.
Huh. Really That's neat. Really cool, actually. Yeah.
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 Really, really cool.
So those are like different studios, so they had to like talk to each other about that.
Yep.
I mean, they're probably right. They must be going through some licensing company, right? Who was just hey, here's an idea.
Here's a bold strategy.
Huh.
That's neat. They already confirmed the next game's gonna be fully voiced, so you won't have to deal with that issue anymore.
When you say the next game, their Expanse game or the next?
No, the next. No. Next
Rogue Trader.
The next 40K. Yeah.
Whatever 40K
game.
Yeah.
It's not Rogue Trader, right?
It's not Rogue Trader. I don't remember.
Is it Lawful Trader?
Man, speaking of the Expanse game, when I first saw that trailer, I thought it was going to be like a tactical turn-based combat game, and I was getting so freaking stoked when I saw Owlcat. And then he gets later in the trailer, and you're like, wait a second. This is a single player campaign. All right, I'll play it, but I'm not as
I'm
excited
mad about it.
Yeah. Oh, I wanted like maglev boots and like space combat. This like real space combat. It's not that.
Don't say space combat to me.
Starship combat. Oh man, what a game. Anyway, Jake, what have you been playing?
So I've been playing the Hitman trilogy again, the new Hitman games. We saw that trailer, I guess, for the new James Bond game that IO Interactive's working on, and it just made me go, man, I want to play those fucking Hitman games again. And luckily, Caleb owns all of them on Steam, so I started playing them all on Steam. So just starting from scratch, it's been really, really fun. The way progression works in that game, it's like a level-based game. Each level is like a little mini sandbox where you go, and your objective is basically to kill this guy, and you have all these fun ways that you can go about doing it. And you get experience for doing stuff, and you gain like mastery of a level. Mastery goes up to 20. Each level you get like a reward. You'll get like, oh, okay, you reached the mastery level 5. Well, here's like a little poison vial that you can use on any level from here forward. So just the more you play, the more toys you get to play with. So it's like, it's nice because you build your arsenal slowly. It's not like you're being given something. You're like, well, I don't know what the fuck this is. I don't know how to use this. You're like, by the time you unlock it, you're like, oh, great. I'm used to like having to find something like that in the level. Now I can just walk in with it.
Is there like a set number of things you can bring into a mission? Or can you just bring in? Okay.
No. So every level you can bring in two items in your pocket, essentially, and they have to be like relatively small items, and you can stash something in the level. So each level will have places where you basically have something planted and you can go pick it up. And that's another thing that you unlock as you gain mastery. You unlock different stash locations and different starting locations. So like now I was just doing one, and now whenever I go to do that mission, I can start as a member of the staff. I'm already like at a certain point in the level with a disguise, so that way I like start a little bit ahead. I don't always have to start from square one.
That's cool.
Which, yeah, it makes replaying levels just a breeze, because like you can just be like, okay, I saw this thing and I really want to play with it, so I need to be like in the lab rather than starting on the street and having to infiltrate the lab. It's like, okay, I'm just gonna start in the fucking lab, and I can go do whatever else I need to do, but I can at least start where I want to start, which is cool. Yeah, I've talked about this game a lot. I don't have a whole lot to add, but it's so good. I guess one last thing I will say. I've been watching a lot of like people like rating all the levels and stuff, and kind of revisiting the Hitman 3 levels. It's getting me more excited for their James Bond game, because they did a lot of stuff in Hitman 3 that sort of pushed the envelope. Like, I totally forgot the very first mission in Hitman 3. Agent 47 skydives out of a plane and lands on like these like steel cables that are connected to the skyscraper, and then he climbs up them to infiltrate the building. And there's this part where he walks in, right, because he's in like a skydiving suit. He like walks in, a curtain closes behind him, and then when the camera goes through it, he's wearing like a full tuxedo. And then the level proper starts, and it's like, that is a James Bond ass start to a level. Yeah, that's good shit.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah,
I'm excited. That game looks really... The new game looks really cool. The new James Bond game.
No, I hope it's good.
Ben!
I have not had time to play too much since the last podcast. Mostly what I've been doing... I played a bit more Expedition 33. Still loving that, but haven't gotten that much further. I also played some of a city builder called Pioneers of Pagonia. So this is one that I played a while back, a couple years ago. There was a PAX... touted as a co-op city builder, or like base builder exploration sort of game. It's loosely fantasy themed, very much like you crash land on an island and you have to build your city up and explore, and there's like bandits and stuff you have to deal with. But they built it around co-op, so you and another person can both build in the same city and kind of go around and work together on doing stuff. So I've been playing a bit of that with Liz. It's still early access, but it's been fun. I'm liking it. The mechanics are good. I think they're still actively updating it, but it's been good. I would recommend it if you're looking for a city builder that is co-op, but the only person I can think of that might do that would be Aaron. no, it's pretty fun.
Are there good co-op mechanics? Because I remember there was some city builder... It was just like you build a city and also they're building a city on the same map, but that was like it.
Yeah, so that no, so this one is you are both working on the exact same city.
Okay.
Are there good co-op mechanics? There's not really any special mechanics for the co-op. It's just you both can control the city. Like okay.
You go build the residential area, I'll go build.
Exactly. Like, it's entirely up to you verbally communicating with each other about, like, who's doing what.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's okay. I think as somebody who plays a lot of city builders, it feels like it slows the game down sometimes because I have to hold myself back. I'll get in the habit of just, like, starting to do everything, and I have to be like, whoa, I gotta pull it back like the other person's playing too. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I like the game. I don't know if it feels great as a co-op experience, necessarily. Mm-hmm. It feels a little like... It feels like they built a regular city builder, and then it was like, also, I guess two people can play at the same time. You know? And I'm like, for a game that's touting itself as like, we made a co-op city builder, I was like, I'd expect the co-op part to be a little bit more like, interesting.
Co-op-y?
Like, yeah, like either mechanics were like different, maybe each person can gets bonuses depending on what they build, or like, I don't know, just something to incentivize us to split the load up other than just, oh, well, we're playing co-op, so I guess we should split up who's doing what. Like, there's no other incentive to do so.
Yeah.
So I'd summarize this as pretty good city builder. It happens to have co-op.
Okay.
Yeah. Chad.
Todd. I saw that Atomic Heart was on sale the other day, so I picked it up. So, you know, if you guys want to check that out, it's on Steam and the library. Also has a ton of, I don't know what the expansions were, but there was some DLC there. So I mean, I got the gold edition or whatever. So there's that stuff in there. It's a pretty interesting game. I basically got it because Munfish is like announced multiple games that they're coming out with. Yeah. And I'm like, well, I want to see what the gameplay is like, because their cube thing looks like basically Destiny. I did not go into this thinking that I wasn't going to be shooting a lot, but I am not shooting a lot. there's a lot more axe play. And there's like an energy gun that I've been using. I did start on the hardest difficulty. I also started it downstairs on my TV, so I had to use controller. I've just stuck with controller.
Oh, gosh.
Heck yeah.
So, that's been an interesting learning curve. I did play a little bit with mouse and keyboard when I walked upstairs at one point, but I went right back to controller because I was like, I like the keybinds on controller. I don't know. I think the story is pretty interesting. Very unique timeline period. Basically being like Russia won the war or something like that. I don't. Soviet Union's the victors. Wild stuff. So yeah, it's been pretty fun. I've been looking through the perk system and stuff like that and trying to get like my shock up to where I can actually fight one-on-one these freaking Terminators coming at me.
Didn't this game flop when it released and then they patched it a lot and made it better?
I think there's a lot of different things that happened. One, I think you potentially that, but I forget where the devs are actually located, but at the time, I think the Ukraine-Russia conflict started happening, and people thought that this was like 100% propaganda for Russia's side.
Oh.
And so there was that like controversial stuff happening, and nobody wanted to support that, and so like not a lot of people picked this game up.
Yeah.
But that's not actually what this is for.
I think it also had a lot of performance issues when it first came out.
Probably, yeah.
But I think those got fixed pretty fast. I don't think it did that bad.
Got it. Cool. Last but not least, Alex.
Yes, sir. I got some El Cheapos this week.
And your El Cheapos, you wrote them all in like regular case? They are not regular case games. These are all uppercase titled games.
They
sir.
Are both all uppercase. Wow. Okay. Abyssal Blade is a Next Fest find that then came out shortly after Next Fest, and I picked up. It's $4 right now. It is a boss rush game that's sort of based on MMO mechanics, and there's just 5 bosses in it, so it's, I think it's really well done though. Like the first boss, the boss that's in the demo, has a lot of mechanics that are based around memorizing patterns and memorizing attacks that happen earlier, and then like they come back up later without warning, and you had to know based on the tell which one from earlier it's going to be and stuff like that. So it's a lot of positioning and like dodging big AoEs and just like trying to get your DPS in. So it kind of emulates that late game MMO dungeoning raiding aesthetic. Pretty neat. What's that?
Are the later bosses still so memory
focused?
Okay.
The second one's like completely different. The third one I'm on now is harder for me for some reason.
Skill issue.
Yeah, it's just like it's basically like just sort of like we do in Destiny, where you have to like figure out the mechanics of what's happening, and then once you kind of figure it out, you just have to execute.
Okay, nice. I like that.
Yeah, there's some good stuff in there. One of the bosses I thought I was doing correctly for a while and then realized I was sabotaging myself and I was never going to be able to finish it the way I was doing it. That was a cool moment. Yeah, the other game, the other all caps game is Peak, which kind of came out of nowhere, I think, but is basically like a co-op mountain climbing roguelike.
Nightmare.
Sort of. Yeah, game based on climbing, Caleb's favorite genre. It's fun though. It's like four player, you're first person. You can kind of scale anything sort of Breath of the Wild style with a stamina meter. And then there's like random gear you find as you're climbing through the biomes that helps you. And there's like co-op mechanics where you can like help each other climb or you can like drop a rope to somebody, but like that stuff's all limited.
You said it's first person?
Yep.
So do you stare at a wall for most of the game or?
Yeah.
A little bit.
Okay. All right. Cool. Great. Okay.
That's a choice.
That is weird, but okay.
Yeah, you kind of
stare at a wall, but you're looking up.
It's sort of a weird perspective because your hands are sort of disembodied Rayman hands in front of you, and those are what you use to climb.
Okay.
And you can look around like while you're climbing and stuff. Like,
sure.
You don't want to stare at the wall, but
you're really selling me on this game.
It's fun. It's hard also. Like each biome you get through has different. Like threats that you have to try to deal with.
Yeah, I think the importants are there is fog coming behind you. You need to do it fast. You need to try to find paths to get up to a campfire. Your stamina meter gets chunked by either needing food or if you take damage by falling, then like now you have less stamina. So now you have to be strategic with your friends to like climb up certain things and help each other up. And you also have to like maintain the backpack with you because that has like your food and stuff in it. The backpack also reduces the amount of stamina you have like already. So you have to like throw the backpack up and hope that your friend catches it.
Or if somebody like can climb ahead of you and help the person with the backpack up.
Yeah.
It's I think it works well, especially for co-op mechanic reasons. Like in the roguelike portion, like you can die and you're just out until you get to a campsite and you can respawn there. Or you can all die and you have to start back over at the shore of the island.
Hmm.
So.
Telling me.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's also very cheap, like I said.
It's going to be a 4v4 extra life game.
Yeah. It's $8, so.
This is the new Chain Together.
Well worth it, I think.
Nah, this is the new. It's the new Breakers. New Penguin Heist.
New Penguin Heist, yeah.
Hell yeah.
It's called Peak, so it can't be mid.
Right?
It's true.
It's getting really popular, and then also some people are hating on it. I think this spawned the new term that's going around, which is friend slop. What people call this genre of game.
That's literally the stupidest thing I've ever heard. What does that even mean?
It's like people that don't have friends, I guess, that are hating on people that like games that they can have fun with their friends in.
Games that are funny. Fun with your friends. Fucking stupid.
I do know, actually, there's the Thunder Store that you could download, and I think you can break the cap of how many players you can have. So you could have all 8 people in. Try it.
Okay.
Probably also get rid of the hunger meter.
Not enough food for 8 people.
Nobody likes hunger meters.
There's probably enough food. Actually, it'd probably be semi-balanced because you'd have to have more food to fill more people, but also you have more people carrying things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Might work out.
There's times where like I'll pick up food or something. I'll be like, oh crap, I need to eat this because there's nowhere to put it in the backpacks all the way over there.
There's a lot of food that you just have to leave behind because you can't carry it with you.
Hmm.
There's also a chain gun that you could just immediately fire off right in front of you and make you go nowhere because you were just trying to do it for science and you're like, oh, this isn't reusable.
All right, I think to wrap this up, friend slop for some reason triggered in my mind. I learned that there's a new phrase for a new word for a hot dog recently.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. A tube steak. Tube steak.
That's apparently a name that people use for hot dogs.
Nice.
Disgusting. Also thought we were going glizzy.
Yeah. So here's the question. And this was the question was postulated this past weekend with my parents as to what if like whether or not a hot dog is a sandwich. I want to get everybody's opinion as to if a
it's
hot
a taco.
Dog
it's
is a
taco.
Sandwich.
Yeah, it's a taco.
It's a taco? Yeah.
Is a taco a sandwich?
No, it's a taco.
I don't think it's a taco.
Taco's a taco. It's not a sandwich.
Okay, then a hot dog is a hot dog, smart guys. What are we doing?
It's a single piece of bread product that is bent on one end. A sandwich is two separate pieces.
So if I took my sandwich and I went like this, it's a taco now. And then I do this, it's a sandwich.
Sandwich is two separate
pieces
of bread.
Two separate pieces of bread, huh?
So what if I take a hot dog and I slice it into thin layers and lay it on a piece of bread, put another piece of bread on top of it, and eat it with like mustard
sandwich,
and ketchup?
Yeah.
That's a sandwich.
That's a sandwich.
Yeah, so the bun is what constitutes whether or not it is a taco.
It's how it's delivered.
So what you're telling me is if you go to, for instance, Subway and you get a sandwich, they do not cut all the way through that Subway sandwich.
Well, it's a hot dog. Mine every time.
Same thing with
mine is cut
Jimmy
all
John's.
The way through.
Same thing with Jimmy John's. It's like taco shape. It's not cut all the way through. So they put all that meat in there, and then you're telling me that thing is a taco, not a sandwich.
You have to cut it wrong.
Taco
with that.
Category.
It's a taco.
Yeah.
Whoa, that's not cutting it wow, wrong. All crazy. These companies do it exactly like that.
Subway usually cuts mine all the way down. I think it's all the way through. You gotta think of how much stuff are you putting in your sub? Because I think if you put too much stuff, then it definitely gets cut all the way through.
Bro, they don't charge for topping. Just load it up.
Exactly. So it's no longer a taco. But if you put just a tiny bit of stuff, if you put like a meat and cheese, that's it. That's a taco.
So if I have a taco and I put too much stuff in it, it's not a taco anymore.
It's a sandwich now.
It's a sandwich.
No, it's a quesadilla because it's a tortilla.
Wow.
This is really what you wanted to end on?
I didn't know we were going to go down the taco route. I thought it was going to be a big debate about...
Like, you've never met us before.
I need everybody to go look at this webpage. If you've never heard of the cube rule, if you're familiar at all. The webpage is the story of it, but you can scroll to the bottom to see the actual cube rule. But it's the rule of how you can tell what things are sandwiches and not.
Am I a sandwich?
Where is it?
Sandwiches are generally subject to sales tax. This bulletin explains what is considered a sandwich. Hot dogs and sausages on buns, rolls, etc.
Oh, wow. Nice. Officially legal.
Pop-Tarts are a kind of ravioli.
Nice.
That hurts.
Oh, no. Oh, look at this chart. This is so good.
What? I like how Pop-Tart replies. Ravioli are a kind of Pop-Tart.
Please don't ask me why I knew where to go find this immediately.
Wait a second.
Is this your homepage?
The hot dog is the true neutral of the sandwich alignment chart. That's perfect.
I was more going by the cube rule is... this doesn't have a page for me to... Scroll down until you see like a hand-drawn chart named the cube rule.
Toast, sandwich, taco, sushi, salad, bowl, calzone. All right, sure. Sure. Toast examples. Okay, yeah. Sure. A pumpkin pie slice and some nigiri sushi. All right. Yeah, sure. Toast.
Toast. Only got one layer of bread.
Bent toast.
Oh. Wait, so a quesadilla is a sandwich. My bad, guys.
Yeah, quesadillas are sandwiches.
And also an enchilada is sushi.
Mm-hmm. They are specific on quesadilla that it's a non-folded, which means the other side's also open.
Ah, okay.
Oh my gosh.
If it's folded, a folded
sandwich is a taco.
Dude, a corn dog is a calzone.
Pig in a blanket
is
sushi.
A corn dog is a calzone.
Yeah, I can see that.
Absolutely.
All right, one last quick
blanket is sushi.
One last quick factoid before we sign off here. Did you know that the Kansas City Chiefs eat more Uncrustables than any other major sports organization in the United States?
Why do they know that?
Yeah,
I don't know.
They know
did
that.
They eat one Uncrustable? Is that
no,
what
they
ate one and they were like, that's it, we win.
No, it's a thing. They like consume them by the box. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah. It's so funny.
Now I need to look up the nutrition facts of an Uncrustable.
Oh, it's awful, dude.
Not
you
great. Look,
you scan an Uncrustable with like the Yucca app or something, it's like a 10. Done for. Anyway, all right, well... Thanks so much for joining us. We will catch you back in 2 weeks. And I'm sure, Ben, will you be starting some new DLC we've never heard of for Elden Ring at that point?
Yeah, probably the next one.
Just playtesting? Cool. All right. Cool. All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us.
This week's podcast was edited by me, Aaron Juno.
Other voices this week include Alex McCoslin, Chad McCoslin, Caleb Juno, Ben Diaz, and Jake John Federkyle.
This week's music was again brought to you by Amer. You can check out his music on Spotify, or you can also check it out on soundcloud.com/Amer. Additionally, you can check out everything that we do, We Are the Horizon, at our website, www.wearethehorizon.com. We have a lot of video posts as well as links to other content we've done in the past.
You can also check out our new series, The Discordant Signal, a multi-arc Starfinder adventure, live on Twitch every Monday at 8 p.m. and then out on YouTube and whatever podcasting app you are using at 6 p.m. on Thursdays.
Again, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.